It's Public Radio KCBX. Issues and Ideas continues.
Hello, this is Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today, we are joined by Lisa Vallejos, Senior Coordinator, San Luis Obispo County Office of Education, and Maria Larios Horton, Director of the Multilingual and Migrant Education Programs for the Santa Maria Joint Union High School District. Welcome.
Thank you.
Nice to be here with you.
It's so good to have you here and talk about the issues of education for all and some of the language barriers. As we get started, Maria, maybe tell us a little bit about yourself and some of the major responsibilities of your job, please.
Great. Well, first of all, I'm the director of Multilingual Migrant Education Programs, as you mentioned earlier, for the Santa Maria Joint Union High School District. And the reason this is really near and dear to me is because I myself was an English language learner as an immigrant from Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico. My job is to assist the almost 2,200 students of the over 7,000 students in our district acquire levels of literacy and language in English while preserving their first language to the best of our ability. So that's primarily what my work entails.
Now, I notice you said to help those kids, which are a substantial percentage of the total, master English as best they can while still preserving their mother tongue.
Correct. That is an endeavor that we take very seriously and believe that in order for our students to be literate in a second language, it's also extremely helpful if we're able to preserve and maintain their first language.
Excellent. Lisa, how about you?
I work at the County Office of Education in San Luis Obispo as a senior coordinator, and my major responsibilities are around teacher trainings on the Common Core State Standards for English Language Arts, as well as the English Language Development Standards, which are specifically targeted for English language learners. I work with teachers in big, large trainings where they come to the county office and we learn effective strategies to promote active student engagement, literacy, et cetera. But then I also go into classrooms. I work with staffs as well at school sites to do some of this same work so that it's more targeted for the needs to the needs of the specific schools and their demographics.
Years ago, I wondered myself, what does a county office of education do besides payroll? And they intervene from time to time. And I know they serve students with special needs. But what I hear you saying is here, one of the main tasks is to help people improve their English language skills.
Exactly. Yes. We are really in the business of professional development and providing trainings that perhaps a school district isn't able to offer because they don't have the specialty staff or it's something just in addition to what they're doing that's just another layer of support or training. And we have math specialists, technology specialists, et cetera, that really help with that extra layer of support.
Now, I think the average person would look at northern Santa Barbara County and say there's a large Hispanic population, Latino population, Santa Maria being sort of the biggest town there. But you would also say, while our San Luis Obispo County is diverse, that it's a pretty lily white community, but that's not really the case.
No, we have a significant subgroup of Spanish-speaking students here, and so in almost every large school district, Atascadero, Arroyo Grande, which is Lucia Mart School District, Paso Robles, and San Luis Coastal Unified, we have approximately, I mean, they're all a little more or less 30%, so that's a significant group of students. And again, we're required to provide them specialty services and really address their needs linguistically. So absolutely, they're there.
Yeah, they. If you teach
alive
it,
and well and growing population,
if you teach it, they will come.
Right.
On a recent show, we talked about the fact that very soon Latino people will be an absolute majority in the state. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, they might be 90% in some areas and 20% elsewhere. But if you think of California as a big and diverse state, you're thinking of that is primarily Hispanic dominated. That's pretty amazing. Now, interesting piece of research I did using our local public library was to confirm a suspicion I had that when California became a state of the Union in 1849, the Constitution required that it be a bilingual state, Spanish and English, specifically in the area of laws and judicial proceedings and public instruction, basically the conduct of government. But in a few years, that got whittled away, and in the 1870s, it got whittled away altogether, making, at least according to the article I read, California one of the very first English-only states in the country. Fast forward to Proposition 227, which at least in broad brush eliminated bilingual education. Could you tell us a little bit about what that proposition was and what you all are doing to address that?
Well, in 1998, Proposition 227 passed, and it passed because essentially the idea was that, well, if we only teach in English, then our students will learn the language. Well, it's just not quite that simple. All of the research even back then pointed to the fact that our students become biliterate and bilingual when we provide primary language instruction as well. And so obviously that decision wasn't made on research. There was a political sense about our students, immigrant students, that I think influenced that vote. And so with Proposition 227, we essentially eliminated bilingual education unless the parents themselves came together and requested a waiver. And so that's how we see schools like Pacheco Elementary and the new dual language immersion school in Santa Maria. So when that occurred, our teachers weren't necessarily prepared with the tools that they needed to provide instruction overwhelmingly in English. And so by essentially passing a law, we know that that's not going to do the trick, that there's a lot of work and support that the students needed that, again, our schools and our systems weren't able to provide. And one result of that Proposition 227 that we're seeing now is this notion of students who have been with us for a very long time, in fact, born in the United States, speaking another language other than English first, now becoming what we call long-term English learners, where they've been in our system for quite a while, and because of the programs and services and other factors, continue to be deemed English learners because we're just not cutting it in terms of getting them to proficiency in English.
It's a long-term proposition, I know. That segues perfectly into four letters which are so significant, ELAC, ELAC. Lisa, could you tell us what ELAC means and what it means for our county?
Okay, so ELAC is the English Learner Advisory Committee that all schools that have 20 or more students that are English language learners are required to provide in order to give parents a forum for really understanding their school, the goals of the school, the really services that are provided to their children. And so the parents often meet monthly.
Well, they get together and they talk about issues of improving education for their kids. As we were discussing earlier, they might elect a representative to go and talk with the principal or possibly the school board, and then that person comes back, because it's one thing to get people excited or, as I say, fired up about something. But then if it just goes off, you know, into the void, like throwing a stone into a lake and there, you know, it sinks to the bottom, well, geez, where did the stone go? You don't know what happened. But there is a follow through. And right. I would like to mention that there's an event coming up at Napomo High School on September 19th. A parent institute. You want to talk about that?
Yes, we're really excited about the fact that we're going to be able to provide parents with some training on not only area topics like the Common Core State Standards, how they can help their students at home with understanding them with becoming critical thinkers, but we're also providing trainings on alcohol and drug prevention, early childhood development, health care, and even things like internet safety. So getting back, so talking about ELAC again, we have some required elements that we talk about in our meetings that the laws, the ed code requires us to talk about, such as the importance of daily attendance, which we know is a critical component of student success. Students that are tend to be at high risk for failure, for dropping out of school, also in most cases have poor attendance as well. But one of the great things that parents get to talk about during an ELAC meeting is the school's plan for achievement for their children, and then they get to provide input to the principal on what their take is, on what they see their needs are, or the needs of the students at their school in terms of support. So right along with this institute, that's this idea of giving these parents more information so that they can navigate the U.S. school system, which may or may not be the same as the school system that they're used to if they were educated in another country. And so that's what we're trying to do with our Parent Institute. That's what we do with our ELAC meetings, as well as provide information about the school, but really empower and educate our parents as well, so that they understand how our school system works and what they can do to support their children, and really be knowledgeable about what it is that their children are learning and where they can go to get help when they need it.
Sounds exciting. It's a free event, Saturday morning, the 19th. For more information, you can call 805-474-3300 at extension 9800. We'll talk about that once more before we break. This is Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today, our guests are Lisa Vallejos, Senior Coordinator for the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education, and Maria Larios Horton, Director of Multilingual and Migrant Education Programs for the Santa Maria Joint Union High School District. Well, Maria, we were talking about the role of parents, both in the councils and trying to help their kids navigate. How does that work as far as you're concerned in Santa Maria? How do you get the parents to attend? How do you get them to participate? How do you show them tangible results?
That's an excellent question, and one that we've been asking ourselves over the past year. And being that last year was my first year with the district, there was definitely that is an area of growth for our district. But we have increased parent engagement significantly in the last year and are looking to increase it this year. I think what's really important to parents, and what has our parents coming back to our advisory committee meetings, is this idea that the information that is provided to them is provided to them in their first language. Not only that, that whatever information we provide is not a simple translation from English to Spanish, but that it care is taken in how it is presented, such that the parents are able to understand the information, why it's important, so that when we ask for input, when we ask for advisory, that it's real, that it's genuine. And we've had a lot of success with that. Our local control accountability plan has our parents' ideas and thoughts and suggestions written all over it, because of the fact that we engaged families for quite some time in meaningful dialogue to ensure that we were receiving the input that was absolutely necessary for us to serve them and to serve the students.
So one way that parents can hear back, and I assume this would be true here in our San Luis Obispo County, is they get reports back from a representative they've sent, but they also see official documents that would have lists of topics discussed. What happens if they want something that the school can't or won't provide?
Well, there has to be some sort of a response to them and some transparency behind why we wouldn't be able to provide a particular service. And oftentimes what we haven't been able to provide is very legitimate. And so we provide them with a response to, for example, a recommendation or suggestion that they've provided or asked for, and we do our research. And if we deem that it's just absolutely not able to be accomplished, we make sure we let them know. And oftentimes it is something we can do, but maybe just not at the moment, but it could be done in the near future. So that's how we go about that.
Lisa, we were talking earlier about how the English learning kids have a sort of a extra burden. That is, they have to go through their regular core classes, but oftentimes they need English language instruction either in the afternoons or on the weekends or during the summer. That's an extra burden, but I gather also it's something that the parents desire?
Absolutely. You know, we can look at knowing two languages in a couple of different ways. We can think of knowing two languages as bringing in a resource to a school and using that first language as a resource to learn your second language and to provide you with some background that perhaps not your monolingual counterparts don't have. We are required by law to offer all of our students or to provide English language development, which is an additional core instruction that the students receive. And it's a time during the day, a dedicated time during the day for language instruction, which is different than teaching in English. So that's one of the things that we spend a lot of time when we train teachers on is really teasing out what's the difference between teaching in English and teaching English as a course of study. Yes, our students need that. So why is it sometimes that they can't access the core curriculum? Why is it that they don't understand? Because there may be vocabulary, there may be syntactical, you know, things about the English language that are challenging that also affects reading as well. And so we provide that extra support to students. And through the ELAC meetings, we train and inform our parents that, yes, their children are receiving that additional support. And oftentimes, the parents are really happy to hear that, but they'll say, well, can we get more? Is there something we can do on Saturdays? Is there a Saturday academy we can do? I know this school over here that does that. Or is there more time in the summer? I'd like to say in particular, we have research that shows us that when we have that two-month gap of time when students are at home, not receiving any they're not being taught, they're enjoying their summer vacation, they tend to fall even more behind than their English-only counterparts, than their monolingual counterparts. And the fact that parents are asking for additional classes during summer school, you know, that's a place really where this ELAC becomes a really important part of this whole communication piece and drives things like additional just support classes. It may not even be a remedial class. It may not be making up for credits, but it's a class where they're just getting enrichment, if you will, but really, again, more opportunities to practice English, to keep their skills up, to work on their literacy so that they're not falling behind during the summer time.
I'm going to make a statement or a proposal, and I want you to tell me if you think it's true or not. I think it is. And that is, when a child goes to school the first time, they're anxious, they're hopeful, maybe a little afraid. But the minute they start to get behind, or maybe they're bullied behind the backstop, as it used to happen to us, mm-hmm. they get discouraged. And sometimes that discouragement gets help. They get a helping hand or a boost, or they get a protector, or the bully gets, you know, taken care of. But just take reading for an example. If you're a poor reader in the second grade, you're probably a worse reader by the seventh grade. So isn't it important to have these techniques and these ideas exposed to kids as young as possible?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. We start with our, again, our focused language instruction all the way down in kindergarten. And really for all students, we encourage more and more, you'll see when you go into a classroom, lots of active participation, lots of oral practice, or what we call oral rehearsal. That may have not been your experience when you were in kindergarten, first and second grade, or on up. If you recall what it was like in elementary school, we had a lot of maybe teacher-directed, teacher-driven instruction where we sat and we listened, and then maybe we had some time to do our homework. We may have done partner work. We may have worked with a partner, but we didn't actually have a question posed and then have an opportunity to share our ideas with a classmate in a structured format where we again, just kind of process what we were learning and then share it out with our teacher or with someone else, with other classmates. And that's really a big push now in education. I would say it has to be, it has been for a while. And even structuring how students answer questions now, that helps an English language learner as well as an English only student, in the sense that we want students using academic talk. We want them talking more, if you will, like a book. And so we start that all the way down in kindergarten. I mean, I think the average person would be amazed at the kind of structures that and vocabulary and academic talk that even students in those lower grades, even little 5 and 6 year olds are using, and that teachers are using themselves when they talk to their students.
So maybe less structured than the schools we went to, but also more engaged, more scientifically based in things that work.
Right.
Kids.
A different kind of structure. It's structured. It's just structured in a different way.
Lisa.
Yeah.
I
really appreciate what Lisa is saying. And there have been some very significant changes or shifts in instruction around language acquisition. Very different from what any one of us in the room have experienced. And grammar teaching in isolation is a thing of the past. And really rich linguistic environments is what we need to be seeing in our classrooms. And so something to add to the teaching of language and literacy is that attention to non-linguistic and non-cognitive factors affecting language acquisition are equally important. And research suggests that when we have students of color in our classrooms who are also learning a second language, that we also pay very close attention to how we are creating an environment that is very inclusive of what they bring to the table. So using culture and first language as an asset to build and provide curriculum that mirrors the experiences of our students and that honors their people's history and contributions all affect and help improve academic outcomes. So while those are not measured by state exams, they are equally important as the research suggests.
It sounds very logical. What would both of you say to the allegation that when you're little learning your first language, that if you're exposed to more than one language, it's confusing?
I cannot find a piece of research that would point to that. It will take longer to acquire the two languages when two languages are introduced in the home. But like the saying goes, you know, the best things come to those who wait. And so if we are patient about our test scores when educating students in a bilingual environment or through dual language immersion programs, we are going to see huge benefits to our students, our families, and our society in general.
Do you agree with that, Lisa?
Yes, absolutely. And we have many examples all over the world of countries where we have multilingual students coming out of elementary school proficient in 2, 3, 4 languages. And no better time to start than in public education and kindergarten. And, you know, again, there's no research that shows that it's detrimental, but plenty that shows that there's huge benefits for students.
I want to give another shout out to the Parent Institute at Napomo High School, 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. on Saturday, September 19th. There will be all kinds of topics, early childhood development, alcohol and drug prevention, school resources. It's free, and it's aimed at parents from all backgrounds, Napomo High School. You can get more information by calling 474-3300 at extension 9800. I have to ask, Maria, part of your title is migrant education. How many migrants are there today, say, compared with 10, 20, 50 years ago?
Wow. Well, I can speak particularly to the demographic at my high school district, but it's definitely, I would say the idea of migration has decreased in that, especially on the Central Coast, we have enough agriculture that keeps families in one place. And so in our communities in particular, we're not seeing as many migratory families because of that. However, we have seen an increase in students new to U.S. schools this year that we did not experience last year. It's doubled.
If migrant families follow the crops here, maybe from Ventura to Santa Cruz, the crops are here year-round, so they wouldn't necessarily have to move. We could spend a whole nother show talking about immigration and walls, and or we could talk mm-hmm. about what's happening in Hungary and immigrants coming from poorer countries to Europe. But instead, let's talk about some trends. What do you see on the horizon from both of you in the next year or two? If you had a magic wand, what would you like to see happen? Lisa, let's start with you.
What I like to see happen? Well, if we're going to talk about parent education, which has been one of our themes right now, I'd really like to see an education that be one of the pillars that we're all really thinking about in terms of student achievement and student success, because we can train the teachers all day and night, right? And we can go in and we can assure that there's best practices. But if we don't have the parents on board, meaning we don't provide opportunities to educate them so that they understand or at least have opportunities to learn about what we do in the schools and how they can support at home and what it means, for example, can I give you a real specific
sure.
example? Even what it means when a student receives, when they get into secondary, a grade of an A. Okay, if you're from a country where there is no letter system for grades, what is that going to mean for you? Now, what is that going to mean if there's an F on the report card? And, things like how can you check your children's grades? Now we have all kinds of online resources. Well, what do we do for parents who don't know about email and how email works? And some of us may think, well, geez, everybody has email. Not necessarily. And so when we don't provide those opportunities and those experiences for parents and help them along so that they, again, have the tools, that there's a lot that we're doing right now that's great, and we're moving, really positively, I think, in the right direction using best practices, research-based strategies to promote student achievement. All that we're doing with the new testing, the new standards is great. That would be my big push, would be for more parent education.
Any final word, Maria?
Ditto what Lisa has said. And secondly, I think our biggest focus is going to be working with our educators to work together, learn together, and to implement the programs, services, and supports that our students deserve.
Excellent. This has been Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library, for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today, we have been joined by Lisa Vallejos, Senior Coordinator with the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education, and Maria Larios Horton, Director of Multilingual and Migrant Education Programs for the Santa Maria Joint Union High School District. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Issues and Ideas on Public Radio KCBX. Gary Eister composes our theme music. Thank you to all our guests and contributors this week. Join us next week for more local stories.